Welcome back to SOAR Financially. Welcome back to a channel where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. Since it's January 3rd, I'm still allowed to say it. Happy New Year. Health and wealth to you. All the best in 2024. May you make some wise decisions in your portfolio. All the best in that regard. And today we have a special guest invited to the program. It's Gareth Soloway. He's the master trader, chief market strategist over at Verified Investing. And it's time to talk charts. Let's talk trade setups. What does it look like out there right now? It's only January 3rd, and it's not looking too great if you look at the charts. There's a bit of selling happening, and he titled his daily video today, The Fear Returns. Let's dive in. Let's talk about the charts. Gareth, let's bring you on the screen here. It's great to see you. Thanks for joining us again. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Yes, Happy New Year, and thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've been extremely busy over on X already. You've been putting out lots of content already this year. How was your start to the year?
It was good. It was good. I mean, I feed off the volatility, right? I don't care if it's up or down, just make it a dramatic move. That gives me trading opportunities and gives me opportunities to kind of talk about things to investors. So it's been a good start to the year, even though the equity markets have been in sell mode. And even crypto has been down a little bit. Gold is kind of stalling out here, but certainly it does look like fear is starting to resume.
What does that mean, fear is returning? I think we need to dive deeper on that definition of fear and what that sounds like. I think I had Alistair McLeod here on the channel. I think it was December 28th. And he funnily enough, just said, well, come January 1st, everybody's going to hit the sell button, right? Year-end rally, that's it. January 1st, new year, sell. Right? Is that what we're looking at? Explain that to us a little bit, Gary.
Yeah, so I think the first thing to recognize is that into year end, people kind of just checked out. And again, it was the markets were having a fantastic year. There was this sentiment that it was just going to continue to float up. People just said, you know what, I'll come back at the end of the year or the beginning of the new year and decide what I want to do. I won't even really look at the news. And again, the news has been generally negative. We've seen earthquakes, we've seen escalations in conflicts as we get into the new year. And I think also towards the end of the year, people were just on the sidelines, not willing to sell because they didn't want to incur the tax penalty this year of taking profits. So then once we got into 2024 here, it was much more of a, okay, let me sell now, take some profits off the table. And I think that's what we're experiencing right now. The VIX is also upticking as people are now starting to pay attention. You know, you have a U.S. debt above 34 trillion. You have obviously the conflicts in the Middle East and in Russia and Ukraine. And I do think that people are starting to reevaluate, is it as safe out there? And remember, the Taiwan elections are coming up. You have China, President Xi talking about, you know, reunification consistently in the last couple of weeks, multiple times. And so I do think that the market had kind of underpriced volatility and it's coming back to where it probably should be.
Yeah, I think we need to reevaluate 2023 a little bit before we move forward and talk about 2024 and the trade setups coming into the year. Because it seems like there was a lot of greed in the market, especially after Jerome Powell came out and said, hey, we're probably going to cut rates three times next year. And he was quite dovish. And I keep using the word aggressive, but he was fairly clear in his statement, which to me was a bit of a surprise, a massive surprise, actually, how clear he was. And the market, of course, you know, took it around and said, well, he said three, let's make it six. You know, it's like dating, you know, what is it? The girl says 20, and it's really 60. And the guy says five, it's really one. Right.
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Like that. So
that's exactly it. And I, by the way, I think you're dead on here is that the markets took this all clear. Investors took that all clear from Jerome Powell's comments, not thinking through the process. Right. So if the Fed is really going to cut what the markets are pricing in six or seven rate cuts this year in 2024, think about where the economy is at that point. Like what has to happen to the economy for the Fed to take that action? And it's not good. So again, into year end, the market kind of said, you know what, we're going to ignore this. We're just going to float up. We don't want to sell because, you know, again, tax penalties were a big factor in my opinion, but now it's reality. Reality sets back in and we're going to get the Fed minutes out here shortly. We'll get the Fed at the end of the month and we get the jobs data on Friday as well, which we're going to see as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. The Magnificent Seven is a big buzzword, obviously, and seven stocks have been carrying the market quite dominantly, actually. How did it look towards the end of the year with the other stocks as well? Was it just a year-end rally for everybody, or was it still very, let's call it, say, bifurcated?
Yeah, I think it was much more inclusive towards the year end. What you see, and this is very common in all asset classes, even in small caps, mid caps, and large caps, is that, you know, you'll have a group that rallies the strongest, the best. And then as those things get very extended, like we saw the Magnificent Seven get extended, people start to say, you know what, maybe I should take a little bit of money out of this group and rotate it into the underperformers. And we saw that with the Russell. The Russell, in fact, I can bring up my chart of the IWM here. And if we take a look, the Russell had just a tremendous year-end rally from the November lows. In fact, let me do a measurement here. Let's see exactly what type of move that was. From the November lows to the end of the year was a 27% move. And that's, again, in basically 2 months. So think about that. Now, we are seeing a retrace back down, as should happen. And again, if we zoom out, I'll show you guys exactly what we're looking at. You had this wedge pattern. So my expectation on the Russell is that we continue down until we get to about the 187 level on the IWM, then that will become support. It was resistance. You can see again how you hit it here and here, and then we finally broke out. So now that becomes support. But just looking at a couple other stocks, it was interesting how Apple started to turn down after hitting a technical double top here and here, and we started to turn down. Then we obviously saw the downgrade to sell from Barclays that hit yesterday. That caused the big down move there. But also in terms of other stocks like Microsoft, this is a classic bearish pattern here that looks like it wants to play out to the downside. So in general, it looks like either there's a general sell over the entire market that could happen, or in the very least, you're going to see it over some of these larger stocks as money rotates into some of the kind of left behind stocks.
Absolutely. I was watching Bloomberg The Open this morning as well, and they got nervous about Apple. It's like down 3 days in a row. And it was only down 0.5%. I was like, why are you guys so nervous? So
I know. And the market only, it seems, and this, by the way, this drives me nuts. I remember a Fed official being asked about, you know, their strategies. And they basically commented that, hey, the market's going up, so who cares? So we're not going to even worry about anything. And it's very one-sided. And this is the way investors are in general, is like, as long as the market's going up, who cares about everything else? But when the market goes down, everyone freaks out. And you could see that with what you're mentioning as well with Apple. I mean, Apple in reality is only down minuscule amounts from its move from last year, but people are already starting to freak out.
Absolutely. Where do you see the most nervousness? Like what sector? Or actually, sorry, let me step one back, actually. When you saw the rally in the Russell, for example, did you see that with increasing volumes as well? Or like, what did that look like? You mentioned the VIX earlier, so I'm curious how that sort of correlates.
Yeah, so I think one of the keys is when the VIX kind of settled down in the lower levels. So the VIX kind of gives us a gauge of fear. And the lower it goes and the less fear people have, the more risk they are willing to put on the table. Well, we know that the Russell, right, is made up of a majority of small and mid-cap companies, which just by nature are more risky than the Magnificent Seven that have consistent earnings, that have consistent revenues and sales, et cetera. So as you do see the VIX go lower, there's a tendency for people to take on more risk, which means that the things like the Russell and small caps and even cryptocurrencies will tend to run during those periods. Because again, when there's no fear, people are willing to take more risk to get that return because they're not worried about anything going wrong. When the VIX is high, that's where it's only those kind of safety stocks, right? Because everyone's so panicked, they'll go to the high dividend payers, the utilities, things that are kind of the sure bets.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. Okay, that makes sense. You mentioned Taiwan elections as a key macro event or one of the key macro indicators here. What are some of the other events you're looking forward to the next, maybe in the next month here as well? Because you got Chinese New Year coming up as well. So
that's
curious,
right.
What else you're looking at?
Yeah, so I think to touch base on that again is that the Taiwan elections are important, the Chinese New Year. And again, there tends to be this correlation between big events happening within China around these events. And so we do want to pay attention. A lot of people have asked me, you know, hey, would you be investing in China stocks right now? To be fair, they are amazingly attractive valuation-wise. But as a trader and an investor, you have to take into account what happened with Russia, right? Russia, we saw them invade Ukraine, and you weren't allowed, at some point they locked down every stock that was a Russian stock in the US, and we weren't allowed to trade those, right? So essentially you could have taken a big loss on some of those when they collapsed, and then you couldn't trade out of them or let them go back up. And so as a trader or an investor, I have to categorize that as a risk factor. And so while, you know, the KWEB, which is the ETF that tracks China, looks really interesting and really good overall, there is some sort of risk there that's you have to quantify. And again, my guess is this is the year that if something happens with Taiwan, it's going to happen. I think that there's a lot of pressure on the China government because of the economy there. The economy is in shambles. They have to make some sort of statement. They have to do something to take the narrative away from the economy. And Taiwan might be that pivot point.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Nothing better to distract from problems than war, isn't it? Sadly. Absolutely. I was going to ask you about the TLT as well and what that tells you, because we're seeing bond yields increase again, meaning bond values are plummeting. Let's take a look at that. I'm curious what your charts tell you about the TLT, because stocks and bonds have been crashing, or crashing is a strong word, but let's say declining going into the year. What does that setup tell you there?
Yeah, so let's take a look at the TLT chart here and see what we have. And what we did see was that TLT had this incredible run, and we know that rates fell from 5% to just below 4%. One of the things I just point out on a technical basis is that the TLT ran into major resistance. And if we draw a trend line, look at this. So again, we see pivot low, pivot low, pivot low, pivot low, and then we broke down. And what we know is this was support over here. It kept on getting bounces. But once you come back up underneath, this now becomes resistance. So what this tells me is that the TLT is at significant resistance and very probably will see continued downside in the near term. Now, again, I don't necessarily think this is going to make new lows, but at least a pullback is very, very likely on the TLT. And if we go to the 10-year, you can see again what had happened here. And again, the 10-year TLT generally correlate because one's 20-year, one's the 10-year. But if we look at this fall, it was just far too fast on the 10-year, right? From 5% down to 3.8% in a matter of basically 2 months. And again, to me, that's an overshoot. And people got way too kind of enamored with the idea that the Fed was going to cut as many times as the market is pricing in. And in reality, it's probably somewhere in between, right? When you look at the truths from each side, whether it's, you know, politically or whatever it may be, it's generally that the real truth is in the middle, right? And that's probably what's going on here. So I do think that yields float back up, probably not back to 5% in the near term, but I could see 4.4 or 4.5% easily in the near term. And that would push TLT back down a little ways.
Absolutely. I'm working my way to the commodities, but we got to talk dollar first before we talk commodities. If you could bring up the Dixie, I'm curious what the chart tells you there and what the setup there is as well, because we've seen a bit of strength. There are always strong words, but some positive movement. I don't know, like, what's the proper technical term for some bit of a rebound in the Dixie, I guess. So I'm curious what the chart tells you there.
Yeah, so on the Dixie, right, we came into this really impressive support level here. You can see the downsloping pivot high here, right through these levels. And that's really what we hit in the near term. And I think somewhat this is a matter of readjusting for risk, right? We talked about how fear is starting to creep back into the markets. Well, when there's no fear, the dollar tends to sell off, right? It's the dollar going lower. There's nothing to worry about. When the dollar climbs, it's because you're seeing Iranian warboats in the Red Sea. You're seeing these other things starting to bubble up, and people are starting to rotate back into the dollar for safety. So I think not only was it a technical level, but the technical level then allowed for these narratives to start to come out at the beginning of the year to help the dollar bounce up. Now, the one thing I will say is, you know, you have to recognize that we've already had now a big bounce on the dollar. And just on a short-term basis, you can see this low is where the high of today is. And so we are into short-term resistance. And I do think eventually the dollar does go lower again. It's just, again, oversold with these kind of worries starting to percolate again in the markets.
Do you see any macro factors or any other factors weighing on it? It's like you mentioned the FOMC meeting minutes coming out today. Is there anything that could cause a breakdown?
Yeah, so I think, again, the minutes are going to be key. I think the jobs data, what we're going to get on Friday, we saw the JOLTS data today. That came in maybe flattish to slightly better than or lower than expected. So it's really that jobs data on this Friday, where if it comes out at a much weaker level, it's going to push people to think the Fed will cut more, which would be a weakening factor for the U.S. dollar. And then, like you said, you know, the end of the month, the 31st of January, the Federal Reserve has their meeting, and we'll find out about what they say. And I really think that's going to be so important, because I don't know if Jerome Powell, and this is one thing that caught my view, is that when he was coming out and he was so dovish talking about rate cuts, I don't know if they expected the markets to rally as strongly as they did. And we saw Fed presidents come out after making comments that were a little bit more like walking back his commentary. And so this is going to be at the end of this month, it's going to be his chance to kind of reset. Is he going to stay with the super dovish? Hey, we're going to cut a bunch of times in 2024. Or is he going to say, hey, listen, we have to wait and see what the data is showing us. And inflation, again, looks somewhat muted, but we're still not back to that 2% level that the Fed has said they wanted. And so, again, you have to wonder, does oil start to uptick again? Do other things start to occur that keep inflation elevated above 3%? And I think if inflation's above 3%, the Fed is in a real tricky spot about lowering rates more than a couple times.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we just had another Fed president come out today as well. I think it was Barkin who came out and said, hey, we might rate hikes are still on the table.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So just backpedaling. Exactly. Yep. Backpedaling as much as they can. And that's probably weighing on the markets as well. So that's why we're seeing the big red sign there. Let's talk precious metals, Garrett. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what is going on with the gold price, because the number one question is, or for me at least, why didn't we see a follow through following the all time highs, Garrett?
Yeah. So on the chart, you know, we have this major level, which goes back to 2020. And this is a hard breakout because it's such a long term move, or goes back essentially now, you know, we're approaching 4 years of price action where it's been held in check just around this 2075 level. Now, we did get that one pop above, but I think, going back to when this actually happened, it was a Sunday night, the S&P futures and the gold futures opened at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And it was like a 20 minute period where you just saw basically the stops run to the upside before kind of the powers that be drove it back down below. So it was a really quick little pop. I think people got very excited about it, but in reality, it was not a lot of action in that period. Since then, we've reattacked this level. To me, this level gets broken. There's no doubt in my mind it gets broken to the upside. I think you're just seeing, again, as the dollar gains, it's putting a little pressure on gold. But for the most part, when you hit a trend line like this and you have this pattern formation, 8 out of every 10 times, 80 out of 100 times, this thing breaks out and you should see a significant move up. Once it really establishes itself above this level, money is going to flow into gold very, very quickly. And I do think you head up towards, by year end, potentially 2,500.
That sounds, music to my ears, Gareth, but you left a 20% chance. And since it's gold, I'll probably short.
There you go.
I don't know. It's just gold. I've been whacked over the head so many times with false breakouts and falls like tops. And
it is frustrating. I'll be the first to admit it is frustrating.
I brought the chart back up here for a second because you mentioned 2,500 is like, can we draw a trend line where it shows sort of, okay, where this might be heading? Just curious what that looks like.
So let's take a look. And one of the things that I've seen here is that there's basically what we would call an inverse head and shoulders, right? So an inverse head and shoulders, here's your left shoulder up. Here's your head right up there. And then here's your right shoulder here. Okay. And the idea is that when you have an inverse head and shoulders, it's a bullish breakout scenario. When it gets above this yellow line, that's the breakout. It has to be on a daily closing basis. And what you do is you basically can measure your move to decipher where the target will be when this pattern completes. And to do that, essentially what we do here is we take the lowest point of the head and draw straight up to that neckline. It's about $460. And then we extrapolate that same move out to the upside. We do $460 to the upside here. And that will give us a completion of that move. And so there you have it right there. So you're basically talking about if this pattern completes in 2024, we would go up to about this 2,550, 25 and a quarter level on the charts. And again, that's standard technical analysis. I'll show you guys something really cool here. If we go to the chart on oil, this actually just played out and I had alerted people to it. Let me just refresh my chart there. So we had this head and shoulder pattern. Let me just go into it right over here. And so I'm going to draw it up again so you guys can see it in action. So you had a shoulder, head, shoulder here. And then right there, this is where it broke down, right? And so what we do is we do that same sort of thing where we take a price range. We take the highest point of the head down to the neckline, straight vertical drop, about $13.90. And from the point it breaks, we drop $13.90 here. And what we could see is look at where we bottomed out on oil, right into that target. So this is kind of using, this is what we would call a head and shoulders, which is bearish. The one we were looking at on gold is an inverse, which is bullish, obviously. So again, just really, I always like to show people how it works out and plays out. And that example on oil is just absolutely perfect.
Absolutely. No, it looks fantastic. Interesting. Given all the geopolitical, you know, turmoil and the Red Sea pretty much being closed to shipping right now, that oil is actually not rallying as well. Why did you bring up the oil chart? Since you had it, just curious. If you've seen a change in, like, there is no real change in momentum. Let me just bring that back on the screen here. From the geopolitical side, you would assume that you know, the barrel of oil would cost closer to $100 right now than $70.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, I still remember when the strategic reserve was being depleted and people were so worried about it. But I think one of the things we have to recognize is that the U.S. is now the biggest producer of oil in the world, well above Saudi Arabia. And so this really minimizes the impact of what happens in the Middle East. And so, you know, in the 90s, in the 2000s, in my early trading career, if what was going on in the Middle East was happening then, oil would have been at $150. I have little doubt. But today is a much different picture. And believe it or not, I think the economic nature of the U.S. now becomes forefront. So, you know, regardless of what happens in the Middle East for oil, if we see a slowdown in the U.S. economy, if we see a recession hitting in 2024, oil is going to break down. And interestingly enough, we have this longer term trend line here. And we can see here, in fact, let me try to get rid of some of these lines here so we can just clean up the chart. But look at that. Trend line going all the way back to 2021 and how it kind of connects here and here. And if we break below, let's say $67, $68, you've got downside potentially down to 60, maybe even the 50s in crude oil. And again, the only way that happens, in my opinion, is if we do see an economic slowdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. No, it's fascinating because I have so many guests somewhere. We talk about macro theories and business cycles, right? And now we're just looking at the naked chart, and it's somewhat uncorrelated. which is interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. And again, part of that too is that and this is something I've said for a while, is that at some point we're going to face a dramatic issue in the U.S. economy, right? With the debts at $34 trillion, with inflation, you know, still elevated, with the cost of borrowing money, you know, where it is, and the state of the politics in the U.S. But the thing is, the timing is always the tricky thing. And that's really where the charts give us a clearer picture. What I think is going to happen, it probably will happen eventually, but is it next year? Is it in 5 years? Is it in 10 years? That's the hard thing to know, but the charts can give us a much more accurate perceptive view.
Absolutely. What are some of the charts that show you the fear as well? Like, gold is one, of course, because it's hanging in there. It's definitely doing its part and it's doing its job, but let's show fear in a chart.
Yeah, so I mean, the best thing to look at fear would be the VIX, right? And the VIX here, you can see for the longest period, it was just nonstop down move. And this is telling you that people, again, it inversely correlates with the stock market. So the stock market began its rally in late October. You can see the VIX was at its highest point. And as the VIX drops, the market went higher. One of the things I'm noticing here is since the end of the year, since mid-December, the VIX has started to inch up a little bit. Now, it's still low, so there's still very little fear out there, very, very little. But this is something that I take note of as a technician, of saying, okay, you know, once fear comes back in here, that's where the markets become much more vulnerable. And interestingly enough, if we look at this, right, so if you look at the VIX put in a bottom on December 14th. The stock market, if we go to the S&P 500, the S&P 500 did not put in a top until the 28th. Of December. And what that tells us is that the VIX is a leading indicator. And so what we can see is, again, that the spiders took more days, basically almost two more weeks for the spiders, the S&P, to put in a top. But the VIX was telling you to start to be very, very careful as it was starting to move up. And again, that's a beautiful inverse correlatory kind of situation there.
Okay. No, appreciate you showing us that. I think it's really, really interesting. What's a level on the VIX that would make you really nervous? If you break above that level, I think you're showing 15 there, 1550 maybe. Is that a level? Or it's like, okay, I'm getting the heck out of this market.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be the tricky thing, right? So definitely this is your pivot low. So 15 to 16 is going to be where resistance is going to be. That's where the bulls will try to recapture and take control again and push the VIX back down, push the fear factor back down. If we broke above that, then you really would start to see, you could potentially see us revisit these highs going back to mid-October.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Appreciate it. Garrett, I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but since I have you, you have to talk silver and some of the other commodities as well and talk about the trade setups for the year. Let's start with gold's little brother, of course, silver. Yeah. What does it look like for the other precious metal there?
Yeah, so silver is stuck in this little bit of a wedge pattern here, and it keeps on hitting on resistance just like gold. The difference with gold is it's a flat top, right? So the gold one is generally, it's showing more relative strength with gold because it's a flat top versus these are all lower highs. And so in general, you still have the potential for a breakout on silver. But again, it's just a little bit weaker than gold, as again, it is making lower highs as it's consolidating in this pattern. Again, you can connect these lows, you connect the highs. As a technician, you basically are watching which line does it break above. Does it break above this one, or does it break below this one? And that would be your next major move in the commodity. I favor the upside, but again, I'm not loving the price action today that we've seen. It is dropping quite a bit compared to gold. Gold is down fractionally, and silver is taking a much bigger hit. I also worry about the industrial side of things. So I am net, if you ask me in the next 5 years, I love silver. I think it's well above 30, maybe even retesting, you know, $50. But in the shorter term here, with potential for, you know, the economy still slowing down, you just want to be a little bit more cautious on silver versus gold is the pure play. That's the place to be when you're fearful, when things are not going well for the economy, all of those scenarios.
Absolutely. You sort of took almost a question away. I wanted to ask you about silver as well. You mentioned the industrial side of it. I know it's just a chart, but how much does the chart tell you that it's actually more of an industrial metal these days than a precious metal? Because it seems like it's quite decoupled. While silver is running into that, I don't know, you're the expert, the wedge pattern. It's yep. running into that tip of the triangle there, where it's either breaking out to the upside, which could be violent, or downside, which could also be violent, I think. It seems like it's completely decoupled from gold. And that's sort of is what my gut has been telling me, because everybody's talking about photovoltaics and all the other uses silver is good for. So the chart sort of confirms that it's not really a precious metal anymore. And please don't hate me in the comments below, but just gut checking here and just see what the chart tells us.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think to some extent it is still a precious metal, so it's still something. It's kind of like they call it the poor man's gold, right? It's the cheaper version of a precious metal. But there is more and more use cases as we get these electric batteries and so on and so forth that kind of brings that industrial side to it. And so you have to, as an investor, you know, you wouldn't be an investor that would say, hey, I want to protect myself with just buying silver. You have to kind of spread that money around the other precious metals because, again, it's not a pure play for protection.
Absolutely not. No. Gareth, one, I have two more commodities I want to ask you about. One is copper, of course, Dr. Copper. Personally, mm-hmm. I'm a bit confused by the price action in copper, given, you know, the recession fears that we're seeing and just overall economic outlook worldwide, actually. And copper has actually moved quite well off the lows, $3.60, I believe it was, up to almost $4 again. I'm not sure where we're at today. I forgot to double check, but it was $3.92-ish last time I looked at it. So curious, what does copper tell you, Gareth?
Yeah, so copper is one of those where you do want to be a little bit careful. You're right, it has moved off the lows. But then again, the narrative for the U.S. economy is that we're going to have this no landing or soft landing scenario. So that makes sense that it would be off of the lows. China's still a concern. Their economy is a mess, obviously. One of the things that I'm a little concerned about is this pattern formation here where we have this high pivot up in this range. And if you draw it down to this low and then kind of connect these lows throughout, you now are creating a little bit of a bear flag scenario, right? So something, or at least a bear wedge. And again, there's your wedge flag pattern right in there. So in general, when you look at this type of pattern formation, the probabilities do favor a move to the downside. So I know people don't want to hear that we might still have a recession. It's not the popular thing anymore, but copper is a good leading indicator. And if this were to start to break, let's say 360, 350 area, I would start to really favor that recession coming on sooner and sooner. And that might be a good leading indicator to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like $3 might be the next stop if we do break through that the bottom yep. trend line there.
Yeah, so, right down here, right in this low pivot would be your first stop.
310, yeah.
Yep, and right in there. And then, I mean, if we really did hit a recession, you could be talking about even lower in the 250 range.
Yeah. Well, we've seen it before, so wouldn't be too surprised. Last commodity, Gareth, I need to talk to you about is uranium. Cool. see if you have a chart on that, because of course the uranium price was one of the big winners in 2023. I think this commodity was up 87%, if I'm not mistaken, last year. Might be off a couple percent, but absolute beast when it comes to performance there. The world is shifting. I think the climate summit in Dubai as well sort of added fuel to the uranium fire, I'd say. So I'm curious what the chart tells us, Gary.
Yeah, so uranium has been holding up relatively well. We have seen it start to back off here a little bit. I like this pattern as long as so what this would be, and I'm going to draw it over here for you guys. So when you have a pattern like this, right, it's known as a cup. And then what you're looking for is how that handle pattern forms, right? You don't want it to be too vertical to the downside. That would be bearish. Right now, it's a little vertical, but there's still time to kind of, you know, see other candle formations on a daily basis. What we want to see is kind of this 45 to 90 degree angle that really puts in that handle for a break to the upside. So again, if we just draw that over here, we can generally see that pattern formation right there, right? And here's now the question again is, or if we continue this way, that would not be good. What we want to see is more of a right angle or 45 degree angle to set up for a breakout. I continue to be generally bullish on uranium just because, again, I do think that alternate energies, it continues to be something that's great, but you're not seeing it have the impact on the emissions aspect of the world. And I do think eventually we have to be realistic and probably say, all right, you know, we got to go to nuclear power again, at least in some sense. And so I think that ultimately is a positive for uranium. So I would generally look for maybe that bullish flag pattern off this cup and handle pattern and then look to buy that if it does form.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate that. Really, really clear how to act right now. It's a hold or not buy pattern right now, that's I would correct. Call it. So fantastic. Gareth, very last question. What's your favorite chart right now?
Oh my gosh.
Do you have a favorite one? The favorite setup that looks just like, oh, this one, I got to do this one. I got to buy into this. Or do you have a favorite?
I would say at this point, it's kind of looking at names that have been beaten down. So one of the ones that we've been watching a little bit is Hershey. And you can see, again, Hershey was beaten down. This is the weekly chart, by the way. So these are all 1 week periods. And it looks like it's trying to put in a bottom. I'd be more on the defensive side. I think that, again, valuations are stretched up here, especially if we do head towards a recession. But people are always into eating chocolate. And so I think that you could be looking at something like this, making a move back up, while a lot of the other stocks that have gone up 50, 100% in 2023. They could be due for some profit taking. So I'd look at the more defensive names, something that are staple. Hershey looks like a good chart to me.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Awesome. No, completely off topic, but I love it. So that's why I asked. So everybody's got a favorite chart setup or something like that. So fantastic. Gareth, fantastic conversation. I truly appreciate your time. Truly value your daily video updates on X as well that you're sharing with us. I watched quite a few. I have to admit, get some ideas from it as well. So make sure everybody follow Gareth Soloway over on X as well. And where else can we find more of you, Gareth?
Find me at verifiedinvesting.com. And we're merging In the Money Stocks into Verified Investing in about a month. So that's going to be exciting. And all my content will be there. It'll be on YouTube and X as well. So lots of places to find me. And thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. No, fantastic content. Thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate it. Really put some perspective about around the theories we discuss here on this channel. It's time to put some, I don't know, what do you call it? Some practical theory around it. Maybe, I don't know. What do you call it? Like pragmatism around it. I don't know. Some chart analysis. Fantastic. Gareth, thank you so much. And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I truly enjoyed this episode here with Gareth Soloway. Make sure to follow him over on X and check out Verified Investing as well. I truly like his daily videos and video updates. He does want to run the market open, definitely discusses the trade ideas and trade setups around the close. So make sure to check that out. If you have any questions, any comments, you might have noticed we're using a bit of a different graphic and interface setup. Let us know what you think about it. Please put that in the comments below. And trying to, you know, improve bit by bit. I really like this setup here. Let me know if you like it as well. Really curious. And please share the video with like-minded investors as well. Leave a thumbs up, leave a like. And if you haven't done so, subscribe to the channel. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back with lots more.